Balcone's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, Spirited Conversations with Interesting People. I am your host, Christopher Hart. And yes, look at this studio. It's not even done. We've got a lot we plan to do with this. Things are going good. We plan to do so much. I mean, listen, 2020 has not been great to anybody. But I plan to end this year on a nice note. And that includes today's episode. So, today we cover the great first ever annual inaugural Pappy Hunt that's taken place in Houston, where we have buried and hidden up to 6 bottles, more than $3,000 in whiskey, to give away for free for those who will simply get off your couch, get out of your house, and go looking. So, 3 bottles have been found. There were 3 bottles left. We've got an E.H. Taylor single barrel, a Van Winkle Lot B, and the Pappy 15. Now, those 3 winners who have already found the 3 previous bottles have just met me before we recorded this today and claimed their own individual clue. So, they've got a leg up on you. I will continue to put them out here. Put the clues out on the show. There's some definite clues in this episode at several points. I encourage you to find the clue via YouTube. The audio is great, don't get me wrong, but it may be hard to hear a clue indicator, the Whiskey Pete logo that's going to be in the video portion of the episode. So be on the lookout for that. Whiskey Neat is supported by the Inspired Spirits at Glass Rev Imports and Amroot Distilleries. Amroot crafts one of the most award-winning Indian single malts to the exact same standards as Scotch. Amroot Fusion also received the Double Gold Blind and scored a jaw-dropping 96 points by judges at the Proof Awards. Amroot Single Malt Whiskey is widely available across America and can be found almost everywhere in the great state of Texas. Go out and get a bottle today. Now, for those of us not in Texas, Amroot is available in your state. I am sure of it. So please go looking for it. Let me know what you think. I try not to recommend anything that I don't love, and I love me some Amroot. Our private barrel will be available statewide within a couple of months. I hope it comes in on the October shipment, so very soon, just a few weeks. And these two Balcone single barrels, for those of you who can see them on camera, we just picked 2 barrels of Balcone single malt cask strength. For those of you who love the Sam Heughan episode and often ask me, what did I serve Sam Heughan in that episode? And I will tell you, it was cask strength single barrel Balcones. And these are 2 different cask strength single barrel single malt Balcones. They're ex-rumble cask, which means they previously held and aged some ex-rumble, which is another great, beautiful spirit from them. We tasted Martin Riza on the Rumble Cask Reserve and Coleman Domingo on the Rumble Cask Reserve in the last 2 weeks' episodes. Shout out to Anthony Starr from the boys. Great episode, great discussion. Couldn't have been happier to meet the guy, and I cannot wait to see what comes out of that man for the next few years. He's going to be a huge star. Without going too much further, rambling the entire time, I just want to say thanks. Thanks for those participating in the contest. Thanks for Balcones for sponsoring and believing in the show. Thank you to Amroot for being just amazing and supporting us for over a year now. Thanks for the new studio. Thanks for everything. I really can't wait to see what comes from the show in the next 12 months, and I just really appreciate you all. Without further ado, I sit down with Jace Van Hooser and Todrick Grube, both now multiple guests appearances on the show. We talk about the Pappy Hunt. We talk about Reserve 101. We talk about some upcoming barrel selections we did with HBS. I'm just feeling good. So, without further ado, Jace Van Hooser, Todrick R. Grube, cheers. So I did bring a few things. Let me turn my phone off here. I thought we could try a couple things. So we did a couple of new barrel picks with Balcones, both ex-Rumble cask. We're about to head back there in 2 weeks to do some rum picks, some Rumble picks, and anything else we taste that we love. Todrick is joining me. And then I also brought some Dusties, and of course this thing. So for those who are watching at home, the guy, the genius behind Whistlepig, Raj, and I believe it's Bakta, could be pronouncing that wrong, I apologize, but he decided to venture out into cognac and Armagnac and brandy. So brandy, for those who don't know, is basically fruit whiskey, distilled fruit. Cognac and Armagnac are just specific kinds of brandy. So you can't bring this stuff over to the U.S. from cognac or Armagnac and still call it that. You have to just call it brandy. He got his hands on some old casks. The youngest one in this bottle is 50 years old, and it's got a cask in it of several vintages going all the way back to 150 years ago, the oldest barrel being from 1868. Then legitimately, to his credit, it is arguably probably the oldest thing in the bottle currently in the world. Mm-hmm. 150 years old. I don't know of anything in the bottle. And that, so just from the historical aspect, it's a very fascinating concept. And price-wise, it's relatively cheap, $300. So $300 plus shipping, and you get it all over here. So I think I paid $330. For what you're getting from the historical aspect and the love of time capsules like these things, it's worth the money regardless of what it tastes like. Now, that being said...
that's what I was going to say. Why is it priced the way that it's priced?
That being said, generally speaking, I think as Americans, we get obsessed with numbers. We think, 150 years old, it must be worth everything and it must be amazing. No, arguably anything that old, a lot of the older Lincantata picks we've had tastes like a dead tree. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, but it's not arguably
some of the
good.
Older rums that we tried as
yeah.
well.
Oh yeah, we just recently
interesting, not good.
we recently in Moore is a dead distillery and Iflet is a dead distillery out of Guyana. We tasted through some 27-year-old and 30-year-old single barrels, and they were garbage.
Yeah,
and so garbage that we weren't going to buy them, because even if we bought them and took the slightest bit of cut off the top for gregarious, it would still be $300, $400, $500
yeah. for something that tastes like old laundry.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
a thrift
old laundry is a good word. Yeah, so let's try it here. So I will say this: I love the box. I hate the bottle. This is a very Art Deco esque wannabe bottle. I think you could have put a little bit more.
It's growing on me in person. Actually, it feels old to me. Like it feels like something that was sitting on the shelf in like 1950.
Okay, I'm gonna set my mic down to open this. By the way, guys, check out the new set.
Hey,
it's great, right? I love it so much. Thank you, Brandon from Culture Map. Thank you. ESPN. We plan to do a lot more with it, especially getting some boom mics, because I think we've outgrown the handheld mics. But I'm going to set this down and we can taste it, and then we can jump into our Balcones picks.
I have to say that brandy is something I'm not all too familiar with, so this will be interesting. Brandy and cognacs, truthfully, all together. I was never in a spot in my bartending career where they were paramount.
There's a lot of interesting stuff out there. Like Copper and Kings is doing a lot of whiskey like brandies that I would recommend.
It smells good.
I don't know if this is going to be a good example.
Or not. Well, and I'd like to talk about our Pappy Van Winkle scavenger hunt.
I just sniffed the microphone. See, I'm going to get confused.
Here. Yeah, I did the same thing too. I poured
what did you
it.
Pick up?
I poured it and brought my mic to my nose to smell the mic. I'm like, why am I smelling the mic?
It smells great.
It smells great.
It really does.
They used Isla casks. Peated Isla whiskey cask to kind of finish the brandy, which I think is clear to try to brighten up the flavor a little bit. It's interesting, very medicinal. It has, I mean, very much like iodine Band-Aid, which is very...
Yeah, the peat comes through.
Yeah, very indicative of Isla. I'm a huge peat head. My opinion on this is because the barrels are so old, it probably needed some brightening up.
Yeah,
something
but why
to go with
peat?
It.
Because it already has that mustiness to it, and I'm not sure how well that. I don't dislike it.
It's not horrible.
I just wonder if a different finish would have been better.
What I said online was that the peat casks clearly overpower everything that's going on.
Yeah,
and that's okay. It's still worth $300.
I don't think this well, it's there. It doesn't overpower the sweetness of the brandy. I kind of like it.
I got the peat immediately, and it kind of stayed with me as I found the different notes, you know. But like usually, like an Ardbeg or Lafroig or something with just a peat balm, usually after a couple seconds it dissipates, and I can kind of map some of this out. This is just a very steady.
It's a peat balm for sure. I mean, it's very much. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of, which is tricky, and I'm not accusing them of this, but it's very common to skirt the rules a little bit in barrel finishing by using a wet barrel.
Right.
I've talked about this before, but there's a very famous or infamous Texas distiller that's no longer distilling whiskey that has played around with finishing in some cognac barrels that had some very clear amounts of cognac in the barrel still. This wouldn't be surprised if there was still Ardbeg or something in the barrel when they added these to it, because it's very pronounced.
It's not bad.
No, it's very interesting. It's a, like I said, it's a time capsule. So let's talk about this Pappy Hunt while we drink our brandy here.
Yes, let's. I guess I should have slowed down.
Oh, did you already finish yet? Well, pour something else. So Todd brought the okra pick. Why did I bring this out?
I also brought the Whistle Pig and Sagamore. I don't know where you want to put them in the lineup here, but if you guys want to try
them. Let's do the Whistle Pig first.
Okay.
So for those who don't know, we've been doing quite a bit with Reserve 101 lately, and you guys have been very supportive.
It's given us something to do.
Yeah. We got a team together to pick, and I got the age statement back on this barrel. It's a 15-year-old Whistle Pig. So
please.
You guys, just grab... Yep. Throw some in there. This was picked by a new crew, right? Some new and old, or
Erica was there. Everyone else was new to picks, I believe, with HBS.
Okay.
I mean, we had three people who had never picked anything before.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, so we met up at Reserve 101 while you guys were shut down and tasted through some Whistle Pig samples for a ride that'll be a few months before it's here. And also a Sagamore. Our Sagamore last year was very successful.
Yeah.
And April texted me this morning about doing a podcast. I'm totally down. Their owner was on the show once before.
Yeah, for Rye Day, which is November 13th for them.
Okay.
That's what they call it. That's their founding day, I believe. So on this Whistle Pig, I just found out on the way in that it's 15 years old.
Yep.
So it's younger.
I just said that, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh. So it's some of the other samples were up to 17, so this one was younger. But still pretty old for a Whistle Pig pick.
I mean, 15-year-old single barrel pick for $80 is 100% a steal.
Oh, man.
It's the best. Absolutely. It's the best value in rye right now.
I get a lot of cherry and like sweetness on this one. There were some wild samples in there. Some of it almost didn't taste like rye, like very corny.
Bubblegum note on this, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of juicy fruit. Oh, my God. Right up the nose.
Wow.
Wow. God, I love Whistle Pig. I used to give them a hard time because of the price, but as the entire bourbon world has gone crazy pricing-wise, they're still pumping out double-digit age-stated single barrels at cask strength for crazy.
And I know that it's not MGP anymore, but when it was, and it's 10 to 12 years old, MGP rye, like that's not cheap, you know?
No. Yeah, and MGP has been growing in price as well. So, so the Pappy, let's talk about this. We've given out a couple of clues in the comments or in the caption of previous episodes.
Sure.
We talked about this off air. I'm genuinely surprised at how both stupid some people are, how dangerous they are with this game, which makes me super nervous, and how incredibly insightful they are. I will tell everyone the vast majority of people who've messaged me have figured out the Napoleon clue, which had to do not with Napoleon, but it had to do with the rail gauge. The old rail gauge used to be 5'6", which was what the height was of Napoleon. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a double entendre because it's been reduced to 4'8" and change. And often people think of Napoleon as being much shorter than 5'6". I will say, I'm very proud of the level of intellect that went into that clue. Yeah. I'm going to brag on myself for a minute. But people figured it out. Lots of people figured it out. And so now everyone knows. And then obviously the very first clue was a nice little animated short that had to do with Whiskey Pete dressed like a train conductor. If you haven't figured it out by now, the historical aspect of Houston that this game is centered around is our trains. The train, the railway history out of Houston. I thought about slipping in a joke with someone about, you know, there's that old, what's the abbreviation for tits and ass?
TNA.
Well, the guy who started and charted the very first railroad here in Houston was Ebenezer Allen, for those who put together the Christmas Carol reference. Yeah. And it was TNO Railroad. I thought about slipping that in there in one of the conversations. But, yeah, so, guys, we've got a couple weeks left in the month. Three bottles have been found. The old Rip Van Winkle was found at, I believe, the Amtrak station. You guys on Reserve 101's Instagram page, mm-hmm. which, by the way, follow the Reserve 101 Instagram
Please.
Page.
Because they will come
be,
as well.
They will be releasing some exclusive clues there as well. And the Blanton's bottle, mm-hmm. which was found on Produce Road.
Yep.
One of the South Railway yards. Try saying that five times fast. And what was the last one? The Well of 12.
The Well of 12.
Was found next to the Metrorail headquarters yeah. On the east side.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got two bottles left, or three bottles left. That's the E.H. Taylor,
mm-hmm.
the Pappy Van Winkle 15, and the old Rip Van Winkle Lot B. We still have 2 weeks left, three bottles left, and things are going well.
Things are going really well. And I've heard from people, friends and family that I haven't heard from in a long time. It's fun to watch them navigate the reconnection and then ask about this contest they'd heard about. But yeah, we're excited to be. I mean, truthfully, we're one of the few bars that during this we didn't alter and become a restaurant. We didn't go for the permits. We just decided that we were in a position that we were gonna
wait.
Be able to just we were gonna be what we are, and so we're waiting. We are definitely on the right path. Greg Abbott said 10% positivity rate. He would
Governor
he would,
Hot Wheels. Yeah.
That's right. And then Sylvester Turner said 5, and we were at 4.1 as of yesterday, I believe. So we're hoping that at any point in time we'll be able to open back up, which would be good for everybody.
But it feels like it's close to me.
It does. Finally, for the first time, like I see people. Strangely enough, I see people forgetting masks when they go into stores and they're not being told to put them on, and just everybody's just loosening up a little bit. And not to say that's a good thing or a bad thing. Just I see everybody kind of relaxing a little bit, and I'm sure that there's a lot of going on, and but the bottom line is that I feel like we're finally on the doorstep of being able to do something. So the Pappy Hunt has given us an opportunity to just kind of get our hands wet again for a while and be part of it. So yeah, we were super excited when you called us.
Yeah, so we plan to, once everything kind of normalizes and the bars open back up and all the bottles have been found, to host an event at Reserve 101 where we invite all the winners back and everyone who's played the game.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to the winners, we'll have a few drinks, we'll kind of celebrate the fun and getting back to normalcy. And yeah, I'm just glad to see the end of the year look a lot better than the beginning and the middle.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
By the way, I don't know if it's the Whistle Pig right after the brandy, but it's really nice.
It is.
It's
it
really
is.
Good right after the... And again, it could be by itself, it's great, but... Right after this,
that's really good.
We had some really good samples. Good. They were all over the place, and in the end, it was almost unanimous on this one.
So let's pull. Let's taste the Sagamore.
Yeah, this one was unanimous.
I brought a dump glass, but I guess we didn't need it.
And so there were two tastings. One for the Whiskey Pig, one for the Sagamore.
Yeah,
we also did a plantation pick as well, and I'm still talking to Docs about that. I know we won it. It was a good barrel.
Yeah.
No dosage. It's a blend of two Jamaican distilleries, and I think the
Jamaican and Barbados.
Oh, that's what it was. Jamaican and Barbados.
And a cognac finish.
And a cognac finish. Right. Yeah. The first one we did in ex Teeling Irish whiskey barrels, all Jamaican, very little funk. This one I haven't tasted, so I'm eager to.
It's good
to get it here.
I liked it. The Jamaican comes through. I think the Barbados kind of balances it a little bit.
Sure. God, I'm so excited. What a time. What a time for spirits. All right, so we'll jump into... I have not revisited this Balcony single barrel, but we did an ex-Rumble pick for ESPN. And just so you know, these are available at Specs exclusively. If you go to the My Whiskey Neat page, you can see which stores... My Whiskey Neat on Facebook, as well as Instagram. Which stores carry this within Houston?
Ooh, excuse me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love these.
Oh, it smells like grapes.
Oh, man. Like Dimetapp grape.
Grape. Grape cough syrup. You love what? These?
The Rumbles.
Oh, the Rumbles? No, this is not Rumble.
Oh, I'm sorry. What is this?
It's single malt and X Rumble.
Oh.
So
these are the new ones.
The new ones. Yeah, gotcha. The Rumble Cask Reserve we love, and we'll be picking out more. Single malt, wide variety of the way they handle single malt at Balcones between X Rumble Cask, X Bourbon Casks.
It is very grapey.
It's very grapey.
The finish is almost like grape leaves, like a...
More vegetal?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely more vegetal.
Yeah.
A little bit of brown sugar in there. I can spend all day, and I plan to in 2 weeks at that place, and just
I can't wait.
Go nuts!
Just go nuts, man!
It's always fun. They're just so creative, like the different types of finishes and things that they're mixing together and doing different size barrels and then combining them, and just they just do lots of different fun things.
I talked to Nico Martini, who wrote the Texas Cocktail Book, is writing a new book on Texas whiskey, and we had a long conversation the other day. I told him. It's currently called, I believe, Texas Whiskey, the book. I think it should be called Texas Whiskey, The Era of Yes. I did an episode of my show with Robert Licorice at Iron Root and Jared Hempstead over at Balcones a year ago. And we just talked about how this transformation in Texas whiskey, in which they say yes to everything. Hey, we want to bring you a Elijah Craig barrel that we aged honey in for a few months. Can you just put your whiskey in it and see what it tastes like? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll try it.
Jake Clements from the Texas Whiskey Festival decided to surprisingly convinced four Texas distilleries to work together to release his own blend for his festival. I mean, we live in an era where for generations, Kentucky was saying no to everything. Yeah. We're too big. We're not focused on these little projects. Texas has said yes to everything. We want to have a distilling camp at Iron Root. My rum barrels from Gregarious Grown.
Where they go out of their way.
They go out of their way.
Out
they
of their way
us.
To be a comedy. Yeah.
They cooked for us. We had a bonfire in front of their facility.
All night.
All night.
Yeah.
And we played music, you know, listening to the... is it Luis and his wife, is it pronounced Baston or Baston?
I always thought it was Baston, but...
Let's say Baston.
Yeah.
Forgive me if otherwise.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
But they sang acoustic. They sang Creep. Like, we just sat out there all night drinking.
Jeremy was playing guitar.
Jeremy played guitar, but Luis and his wife, and his wife, they sang. And I've thought about their heavenly voices every day since a year ago when we went. I mean, just this era of distilleries willing to go out of their way to try things just for the sake of how much fun this hobby is.
Sure.
So, anyways, I'll stop rambling about it. But
well, let me ask you this. So we've gotten to the point now where experimentation is kind of what people are doing finally. But Texas for a while was kind of struggling to really put themselves on the map in terms of Texas whiskey being a viable candidate outside of the state.
Sure.
So as we move on to these new experimentation phases, what do you think the anchors are for Texas whiskey? If somebody comes from another country, never been to America, and says, "Tell me about Texas whiskey," what do you think the boxes that need to be checked for us as Texans? I mean, not necessarily just on paper, but like for us to feel like this is a Texas whiskey. Sight unseen, you take a sip of it and you think that's a Texas whiskey. What kind of characteristics do you guys think that Texas has to offer?
Okay, it's interesting. I wouldn't focus on the characteristics because a lot of Texas distilleries are still trying to figure out what works.
Right.
And to be honest with you, this, I forget what it's called, but what's it called when you're overtly patriotic, the self-aggrandizing obsession with your state or where you come from? I love Texas. It's beautiful. I'm not leaving, but I think that it doesn't bode well, just like Americans, and we're obsessively freedom.
Sure,
like that, what's that group that we make fun of all the time? The Sinners Club, where it's like they're all, you know, that America, like, you know, your truck has some truck nuts and you're wearing, your wife's wearing lingerie with the American flag on
and
you're like guns and freedom, right? I hate that.
Yeah. Ultra patriots.
Yeah. Ultra patriots. Well, Texas, I think we don't bode well in other states when they have, what was that, Devil's River? They did a market research study showing their bottle that had several outlines of Texas on it, and and the, a star. You know, we're big on adding like a deputy Norris star on our. This mentality is, I think, it's not the way we should be presenting our spirit. Sure. We should be focusing on the spirit and the terroir and the difference of what to expect, but maybe not so much on the cowboy.
But I wonder if that's going to evolve, because, you know, obviously we know how distilleries are when they first start. They have to put out products that will make the money to sell, and we know that, as you just said, Texas loves Texas.
Yeah, but so, you can do that without that, because it also turns people off long term.
No, well, I'm talking local, because local Texas people walk into a big box store and they see Texas whiskey and it's very clear, and they're like, I'm going to support this brand because it's Texas. But yeah, that may not work nationwide. What I'm saying is, I wonder if they don't evolve their branding once they get beyond, you know, Texas, because a lot of these brands sell great here, but maybe not in New York. They're going to look at that and be like, eh.
Well, here's the thing.
Too hokey.
You can still do that without leaning heavy on the "I'm a cowboy" sort of thing.
Well, sure.
I think
like Buck 8 is going too far with the ranch hand hang.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, no, but Iron Root does it. Iron Root does well in several states. I mean, Iron Root's killing it right now. They're one of the few Texas distilleries that isn't hurting the way that other distilleries are.
Yeah, and they're not overtly.
Zero overtly. Yeah. It's all in the POS. It's all in the, like, hey, this is made in Texas, grain to glass. Cool. But they're not leaning heavy. I mean, if you go to Specs, they sell tequila out of cowboy hats, out of some, you know, out of sombreros. There's even a glass sombrero, and it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing? So, that being said, what do we look for in Texas? I would present the Rumble cask just to show them something off the wall. Mm-hmm. I would present a lot of our cask strength offerings. I had a great Garrison Brothers the other day at the Rue Pour at Baybrook. Mm-hmm. It was their Balmorea. Mm-hmm. Again, I think Garrison's leans a little heavy on the country.
Sure.
But it was fantastic. And a big, bold cast strength. I get a little turned off with the barn hay gasoline intensity sometimes. But I think a lot of distilleries I think that has to do with what size barrels are you using.
Yeah.
You know, are you taking some cuts? A lot of Texas distilleries aren't taking cuts. But they're not trying to be Kentucky, and they shouldn't be.
No, that's the thing. People can't go into Texas whiskey expecting Kentucky. And to answer your question, I think single malts are fantastic in Texas. We've seen several different distilleries do them, and they're awesome. And I think that they stand up to Scotch, and it's different. But I think it's something that I would present to someone. Also, I think up-and-coming rum, you know, with the heat here, I think that there's potential there. I think we're just starting to see it. And then I love things like Rumble. I had a friend from Kentucky in town. He had never heard of it. And I gave him the Rumble tequila cask that we did. And he was blown away by it. And
Those barrels are insane.
Yeah, and he brought it. He's like, well, what is it? I'm like, well, it's, I don't know. It's a spirit.
A little column A, a little column B.
It's good.
Yeah.
And your wife loved the sherry one, right?
Everyone in Kentucky that he brought it to loved it. So, like, stuff like that. And that's what I like about the experimentation in Texas.
I actually thought the tequila barrel was going to be more divisive than it was.
I was surprised. Like I said, I went into the three thinking it would be my least favorite, and it was my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your wife, she actually posted on Instagram the sherry barrel, I think.
Yeah, which is shocking.
And you know what's funny? A good friend of mine, Charu, you know Charu, Galand, over in California, he didn't care for the sherry as much because he felt like it was just overpowered with sherry.
Yeah.
And I didn't hate that. I mean, I didn't hate
that. I like sherry bombs.
Yeah, so I love sherry bombs.
It was great. But I could see how someone wouldn't like it, but I like it a lot.
Yeah, I wonder if
I love Glendronic. I do love Glendronic.
Oh, of course. Who doesn't love Glendronic? I don't know if anyone is like, you know what brand I hate?
Yeah.
But that's one of the easiest.
One of the best single malts in the world.
It's one of the easiest half steps to give somebody when they come in and they say, well, I like Macallan, but I'd like to try something else. Something. So any big sherry, Glendronic is the first step into a new world of big sherry scotches. I feel like people feel safe on an island with things like Macallan, and even Dalmore to a degree is an exquisite whiskey, but it's around now and it's present, it's popular. And so I think that Glendronic is starting to kind of get that accolade as well.
It was my entry point because I started in Scotch and then I realized I didn't like it. I kind of fell out of it. And then someone brought a Glenjo 18 and I was like, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like my wheelhouse now. I like sherried Scotch. I haven't gone into the heavy peaty stuff. I think I probably will because it's been a good entry point.
Yeah, Pete is a tough one. Watching people, I always kind of I always kind of liken it to kind of the cigar of the whiskey world. Like, it's one of those, it's just one of those things that very rarely, I have very rarely witnessed, not to say it doesn't happen because people jump out of the woodwork when I say this, but I've rarely witnessed somebody come in new to whiskey, try a peaty whiskey, and love it. And it's usually sure. It's usually just the abrasive nature of how strong it is. It's not so much.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's funny. I probably told this story before, but I think my first scotch that I remember at least was when I first moved here to Texas, and I went into Specs, and I'm standing in the scotch aisle, and I had no idea what I was doing. And I don't know why I wasn't just honest with them, because he's like, what are you looking for? I'm like, I don't know, I'm looking for something in like the $70 range. And he put me into a 10-year super peaty. Well, he asked me if I like peat, and I'm like, yeah, sure.
He seems cool.
I don't know what peat is. So he put me into Goose Island 10, which just when you open it, it smells like an ashtray.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to get in trouble for opening it at all in the house. And it was, you know, at first, I think like most whiskey drinkers, I was like, okay, it's not bad. But and then I realized later, it's not good.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just not.
Yeah, I think you will get into it too, because the one thing I've said about you, Todd, Todrick, is I think that you are huge into expanding your palate and learning. And that I recently have ranted to you guys about the nature of this hobby, in which a lot of people who only ever drink bourbon shit on everything else and have all these opinions about all these things, but they have very narrow, underdeveloped palates.
True.
And it's part of my frustration, because where I'm not saying I have this great palate. In fact, I've gone out of my way to not to present myself that way because of where I am in this hobby.
Sure.
If I present myself as this badass and people taste things that they don't care for, it's just going to be like, oh, Chris doesn't know what he's talking about.
Sure.
I've tried to avoid all of that. Todd, however, we did a blind tasting recently. Blew it out of the park. He did everything he could to really pick apart every sample. You ended up winning that blind challenge, and you objectively have a great palate.
What was the challenge? Like, what you had to?
So Wade basically had a bunch of samples, 18 blind samples.
They were picks. The best of the Gulf region picks is what it was.
And everyone's supposed to taste it, give their review, give their rating, maybe guess what it was. And you guessed several of them correct.
Yeah, I got half of them.
Wow.
Yeah. I guess the distillery and the product. Yep.
And he dethroned the current champ, another one of the admins, Randy Svetlik.
That's the big part of it.
Yeah.
Randy talks a lot of shit, because Randy's known around town as having a good palate.
Oh, he has a great palate.
He's been part of a great pick group for a long time. So,
but see, that motivation you had to dethrone him is exactly why I try not to. I just say, like, if I like something, I like something.
Sure, sure.
But it does drive me nuts, because even though I don't present myself that way, I pick a lot of things that are outside the box.
Sure.
And people love to, nope, not a fan of this.
So I just, just last night, like, just to show that it's fun to branch out even if it's not your favorite spirit. So I don't like too smoky or peaty. Mezcal is something that in the past I was just kind of not going to seek it out. If someone said I have a great one, I'm always willing to try something. So I got some samples, and I sat through, and I've said before to a lot of people, when you're getting started, pull the flavor wheel out. I was trying to write notes, and I wanted a mezcal flavor wheel, because it's just different. It's very earthy and grassy,
different ball,
and like all kinds of different things. I had a great time drinking it and going through the wheel and like, what am I tasting here?
Sure.
Because I'm not used to that. And it made me enjoy the whole experience more. Just spending time with it. Even if it's not something that I don't seek out, I loved it. And it was a lot of fun.
I feel like people get intimidated by people with exceptional palates, if you will, for lack of a better term. People that are new to whiskey sit down, you tell them you taste things like Tabatco and dried mint and bubblegum, juicy fruit, things of that nature, and they immediately think, well, I don't taste anything close to that. This seems like maybe this isn't my thing. And it's amazing to watch people as their progression, as they continue to taste new whiskeys and adapt, and all of a sudden they're the ones that are coming up with even more nuance.
The power of suggestion is there too. Like, if you're giving simpler notes, a lot of people will go, like Chris said, bubblegum, and then it's like, yeah, I get bubblegum.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and that's why I say again, the flavor wheel is something I always recommend for somebody that's just getting started, because I'm not sophisticated with my descriptions.
Sure.
If you just told me blind, you know, describe this, it's not going to be very, very eloquent. True. But if you give me 15 minutes with my phone and like I can sit down with it, and then yes, I'm going to give you great tasting notes.
Get a thesaurus and say marzipan.
There's nothing wrong with that because, you know, my brain just doesn't make the connection directly. I need a little help to tell me what it is that I'm tasting.
Off of this. Rhubarb. Anything with more than two syllables and you sound like a
So I felt like I had to step up my game with Balcones because when you look at Jared's notes, it's things like, you know, like brown autumn leaves.
Yeah.
And dude, like shoe polish. And Balcones, I'm like, bro, this is
really
amazing.
Good about like their notes. Their notes are crazy.
Yeah, he finds a way to find like some off the wall item that I taste it. I'm like, wow, it does taste like shoe
this,
polish.
This just like a South African brown sugar at like 20% yeah. burnt, you know, just
in March.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. But God, this is. I'm
so really is this another? This. I see it says French.
Yeah, so this is a much heavier. What they did is there was French oak that previously held Rumble.
Well, look at the difference in the color.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think one was first fill Rumble. The second one was a little bit more mild. But they're night and day different. Both X Rumble. A lot
that
more
one's
darker.
Like black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one's like night.
Yeah, Reserve did a private barrel years ago for our 10th anniversary, 4 years ago, I guess it would be. And we did the single malt Asian European oak. Which was great. It was super high proof, and it was
Asian European oak.
Yeah, it was their single malt Asian European oak.
Interesting. Yeah. So I wonder if it's the same species, but maybe grown in Asia.
We still have a couple of bottles at the bar. Yeah, I'll bring you one.
that reminds me. I mean, at this point, they might as well just be mailing these things to me. I mean, we had such. You've been up how many times with me for the little,
for where
for the to Balcones privately,
with you twice I think, or maybe three.
Besides
times.
The big summit we did in February,
twice. Yeah, and I went up one time without you when we did our initial selections for the summit.
Okay, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
I also brought a 1984 J.W. Dant Bottled in Bond. I've been needing a reason to open that, and we have about 15 minutes left before Todd's got to go.
That's a reason.
That's all the reason I need, man. It's all the reason I need.
Okay, I will dump that.
All right, yeah. I'll dump this one, too. Let's see here.
You didn't get to try the Sagamore. You get to try that, too.
Oh, yeah. We'll do the Sagamore next. I'm going to set this down real quick.
So you said the second pick took a little bit longer than the first pick.
Mainly because we just wanted to hang out afterwards.
We're just happy to
It was actually less samples. But I like to take a break in the middle of a pick. So we were drinking and we were kind of stuck. It was a split room. Sure. So we walked out of the room and then I like to and then blind the two.
Sure.
And then when you come back 10 or 15 minutes later, your palate resets. And I think people get confused about what's what.
Sure.
But it then became unanimous. Everybody liked the same one. I think we got a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to try it.
Be careful sliding that bottle across the table with the mics, but I poured.
It literally has dust on it.
Yeah, an actual dusty, hence the word.
Sure enough. That's like cake on dust.
Yeah, 1984. That bottle smells insane. Obviously, pre-fire Heaven Hill. Actually, I don't even know.
Weird.
Hold on. That is not. It tastes very odd.
It smells actually, musty.
I try not to misspeak here. I don't remember. Yeah, DSP number two. Oh, it's two. Indiana.
That's awesome.
Nope. Hold on. This is very odd. Bottled at DSP Indiana 2. Distilled at DSP KY 113, Frankfort, Kentucky. Wow. Anyways, interesting.
So muted.
Yeah, it is. That's an odd one.
I mean, for 100 proof, for a bonded whiskey, that's pretty neat.
It definitely dropped.
The proof is definitely dropped. Yeah. Speaking of which, I wanted to also mention that I plan to release a quick 2-minute, 3-minute video. I got on the horn with the people over at Bullet and the people over at Four Roses. And instead of having the debates in the comments...
I'm excited already.
Instead of having the debates in the comments, I figured I could put out a quickly digestible 2 to 3 minute video and just say, hey, these are the questions I asked. These are the questions. That's what you do. I work in media. I guess I'm technically a news reporter. whatever the whatever you want to call it, right?
Technically.
So barely technically. I mean, that line is blurry as hell. But the question often comes up, I went to Bullet, I picked out a barrel from the barrel program, is my Bullet Four Roses? Now, Betteridge's Law will tell you that any headline that asks a question, the answer is always no.
Sure.
So I'll preemptively tell you the answer is no. But there is this prevailing theory that Four Roses was distilling for Bullet for many years, and that stopped in 2015. Bullet has just released a bunch of 8 to 10 plus year old single barrels for their barrel program. You go there, it's 10 different recipes, 2 different mash bills.
Five different yeasts.
Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm. So 1% difference in the mash bill on the rye. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's very similar.
It makes sense, but that's actually quite common. Mash bills.
The yeast being different is a huge difference.
Yeah.
It's not the same yeast. It's not the same.
Yeah. So
as the catalyst, yeah.
There's this prevailing thought that those barrel picks are basically Four Roses picks at 104 proof. Here's the problem with that. Why would you think that? Now, there's parts of this I don't know, so I plan to approach this objectively, but there's parts of this I don't know. As far as I think, this is what I'm not sure about, and there's things I am very sure about. As far as I know, that the Four Roses only ever distilled one recipe for them, that it wasn't all 10 recipes. They didn't have access to all that. Two, what I do know for a fact, now, it might have been more than one recipe. That's what I'm waiting to find out. But what I do know for a fact is that all the liquid that leaves Four Roses today, it, basically, they stopped contract distilling in 2015. Mm-hmm. As those barrels come to age, they're dumped and sent in a tanker to Bullet. They don't leave in single barrels. Well, Chris, it might be rebarreled at Bullet and then sold as a single barrel. That's very expensive.
Yeah.
And they've blatantly denied it. They said, no, we don't rebarrel these. So I've had this whole conversation.
It seems extremely costly and time-consuming.
So what people are basically saying, what they don't realize what they're saying, is that Four Roses only ever distilled one thing for them, and Four Roses already has a hard time keeping up with their 600-barrel program.
But I guess the question is, if they stopped in what year? 2015?
15.
So they could have created stuff that's 10 years old now that's at Bullet.
Yeah.
Did they ever send single barrels out?
And I asked that question. I also asked...
Like 5 years ago.
I also asked what price, what year age range is the stock when it leaves. Because the December 2018 trip that you, me, Adrian, and Mike went, they were dumping Diageo barrels then. We saw them. We took pictures in front of the empty barrels. Remember? Mm-hmm. Those photos of us standing in front of all those empty barrels at Four Roses are all Diageo Bullet barrels.
Mm-hmm.
They dump those barrels, send it over in a tanker. So I asked him, how old is the stock when it leaves? If it's 6 to 8 years old, that means that these 8 to 10 year old barrels are not. Unless you're saying, and I was saying this before Todd said something, if they've only ever made one recipe and they had to stop, Four Roses cut them off, and Four Roses is already having a hard time keeping up with current demand. You're saying that somehow Four Roses has enough juice to supply two full programs and let Bullet recoup all of that, like benefit from it financially and all that. If Four Roses has that income, and by the way, they're selling it for much more money.
Yeah.
I suspect that
Bullet,
Bullet has some barrels that were distilled at Four Roses and sent out in a barrel. This is just based on nothing.
That is a great question.
Other than the fact that I've tasted a couple, and I've drank a lot of Four Roses, that it tastes very similar to Four Roses product.
So,
but I've had others that absolutely are not. Absolutely are not.
When I approached Four Roses on this, I talked to Mandy, who's the head of their barrel program. We started an email chain with Brent Elliott and their PR company. So we will get a formal statement from the people who would know at Bullet. Or at Bullet and at Four Roses. I also talk to Bullet's people. But I want to get a collaborative statement from both sides that address all of those questions.
Sure.
I know it doesn't leave the distillery now in a barrel. Has it ever left in a barrel? Have you ever sent barrels over there? Because then it could be. If does it leave in a tanker currently? Have you guys ever sold Bullet more than one mash bill? If so, how many of them? I'm asking Bullet, are you guys rebarreling into brand new barrels with the juice that comes over? They said no, but I'm going to get a formal.
Would they answer you if you asked them if they're bound or have ever been bound by a non-disclosure agreement?
Yes, I asked that as well.
And that would the non-disclosure force them to say no?
Yeah, well,
you know,
that's not how non-disclosures work. One of the questions that does come up is, distilleries have been not truthful before. Yeah, they could lie, but why? They've never had a reason to lie before. They were never hiding their relationship with Four Roses. They've openly addressed, the worst kept secret in bourbon is everyone knows that Bullet was sourcing from Four Roses. If they've never had a reason to lie about their relationship, but somehow now they have enough juice to give them all 10 recipes and for them to sell it cheaper than Four Roses. Yeah. So you're telling me that a company is willing to supply at a $25 price difference, a cheaper...
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense. Four Roses can sell it themselves.
The detail that I think some people lose, though, is that just because Four Roses distilled it doesn't mean you need to act like it's Four Roses juice. Because it's a different mash bill and it's different yeast, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the mash bill is similar, but it's different yeast. Yeah. It's not the same stuff.
I do know that they were getting OBSV, or is it? I always forget what recipe, but I did see the DG OBSV.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, yeah. So I know for sure at least one recipe was going to Four Roses. And one of the questions that came up, there's a guy named Charles Cumberland in HBS, and he's gotten riled up about this subject before, and when asked a question just kind of fell silent. He seems like a nice guy. I'm definitely not trashing him, but one of the things he said is that exclusively 10 years ago Bullet was sourcing exclusively from Four Roses. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily believe that that's true, and so I asked them, can you guys confirm if you ever exclusively sourced from Four Roses? Just to cover all of our bases, all the questions that have come up over this debate over whether or not Bullet is sourcing from Four Roses for their barrel program, which doesn't add up logically. Simplistically, it makes sense. Oh, 10 recipes, boom, 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 boom. But Four Roses would have to be, who's already having trouble keeping up with their demand, willing to sell and give access to a whole other brand at a much bulk price rate. When they could sell it themselves direct at cast strength for $25 more. Yeah.
Maybe that was the parameters of their original agreement.
But in 2015, it wasn't the same as it is the last few years. So this is what makes me wonder about the past.
In the past, sure.
Certainly now, no.
Sure.
It's hard enough to get a barrel pick now.
That was a great question. And there's some debate over why their relationship ended. Could Four Roses not keep up and now they want to focus on themselves? Mm-hmm. Or, and this has come up as well, there was some conversations that happened about in the past where Jim Rutledge had some suspicion that what was in the Bullet bottle wasn't just Four Roses, and it was supposed to be just Four Roses. Mm-hmm. Some testing was done. I've heard it both ways. Some testing was done, and they found out, they bought a bottle of Bullet off the shelf. Some testing was done, and it was not just Four Roses. It was a blend of something else. Sure. I've heard that was upsetting, and that was part of the reason why they separated.
So that this is all assuming that there was an exclusive.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've also heard the opposite, that they tested it, and it was not supposed to be just Four Roses, and that it was tested, and it was all Four Roses, and that also upset Four Roses.
Okay. That makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
Me too.
So, at that point, it's rhetoric, and I want to be very clear. Yeah. There's things I know for sure and things I am not quite sure of, so I don't want to die on the cross, so to speak, for this thing. We will find out. So that video will be out soon. We'll address it. And I'm just going to approach it with hey, I looked into this to be sure. I don't want to come off as preachy or arrogant.
Sure.
But if we can get the question answered,
Hopefully it can be definitive in some way. Because you know how people like to poke holes.
I'm hoping. Hoping to be definitive. How much time we got left? About 5 minutes? You got to leave it exactly?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got 2 minutes.
Good man.
All right. Well, listen. I'm just enjoying this. What else? There was something I was going to mention before. We didn't taste the Sagamore. So let's do that. Do you have time for Sagamore? Just pour me the Sagamore. You can leave. You can get the... That's the Wispig.
You have it already. I already poured my Sagamore.
Oh, so that's my Sagamore. Okay.
So this is a 7-year.
7-year. Wow. Schmance?
I think their standard is normally around 6, so it's a little bit older.
Yeah. It's a blend of 2 6-year-old barrels, I believe. I forget.
Yeah, it's a high and low rye MGP.
Oh, yeah. That smells insane. Oh, tons of... So from Sagamore specifically, I get a ton of that sherry influence, those Christmas flavors, red berries, baked fruit. It's pretty good.
That's really good.
Yeah. I definitely would totally mail this to someone in the mail.
And this one's 110 because, you know, they do the standard 110. And the Whistle Pig we had is one of 3.5. You know, being a little older, the proof really drops down.
One of the best Whistle Pigs I've ever had was 120. I think it was Brian Wayne at Poison Girl that did it.
Mm.
And then I've had a lot of really good lower proof ones that were cash strength. They're just incredible. So, listen, I appreciate you guys coming out. It's been fun. Enjoy drinking with you. Thanks for coming on the new set.
It's beautiful.
I like
it
like this.
Dude, Jace.
Ready to have a party?
I am so excited about this.
Man.
Let's get this game going.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I'm excited to start changing in these coins as well.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you guys seen, but those coins are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, they're awesome, man. One. I brought it.
I'm so glad.
These, we're going to get more of these made.
Yeah.
These are insane. And we plan on making this bigger and better every single year. So,
oh, man.
Listen, Todd, thanks so much for coming, guys. I'd give you a fist bump, but we'll stay socially distanced. And cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Bing.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.